And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronson. I'm here with my little brother Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, the history and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so wonderful.
That's right. And there's lots of it. Lots and lots and lots of it. So let's start with what we see on the visittucson.org page.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right, Jeff. If you go to visittucson.org and you click on their events page, and Visit Tucson is actually the site for the Metropolitan Tucson Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Right.
Who great sponsors of the Fred and Jeff Show. And actually, if you go to jeff.com and click on upcoming events, you're going to get the same list of wonderful stuff going on. And some of the cool stuff going on right now, Butterfly Magic is still going on at Tucson Botanical Gardens.
All the way through the end of the month, right.
There's a poetry festival coming up, and it is, I can't remember which annual it is, but it's one of the biggest poetry festivals, if not in the region, if the country. If not the country, then the region. But we want you to go check out these websites. So go and check out the Poetry Festival. Next weekend, I think it's next weekend. I got to look at my calendar. But in 2 weeks, if not next weekend, is the second Saturday Downtown event, which people from all over the community just mob the downtown and have a blast down there.
It really is fun.
Continuing downtown, too, at the Rialto, on the Rialto block is Science City. And I believe they're still doing the Mars exploration stuff.
They are. And don't forget, the Tucson Museum of Art has a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous presentation for the Art of Frida. And that's going on Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all the way to the beginning of June. So there are a lot of people who are fans of her art. There's also the Wild West Days at Old Tucson. So if you want to go out to Old Tucson and have some fun with the kids... The Hollywood in the Desert has got all kinds of recreations of 1880s frontier life. And, of course, one of my favorites starting next week is minor league baseball in Tucson. Padres. Yeah, the Tucson Padres.
Yeah, we're going to be having Mike Fader come on and talk about Triple A baseball.
Yeah, that's right. Triple A baseball, minor league farm team of the San Diego Padres. So if you're a big Padre fan, and I know there are lots of San Diego Padre fans out there in Southern Arizona, you want to come check out the Padres at the Keno Sports Complex.
Absolutely. So go to fredandjeff.com, check on the current events.
Oh, but Fred, there's more. Let's not forget the festival in El Barrio Viejo with Calexico and friends.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to try and get Calexico on.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's so much stuff. You know, it always cracks me up when people say, gosh, there's nothing going on in Tucson. Wrong, I say. Wrong, wrong, wrong. I mean, not only do you get to go outside and spend time hiking and biking and walking and, you know, living in this wonderful
community.
And this is like,
you know, right now every weekend there's a 5K going on. There's bicycle events. There's all sorts of things.
Yeah, there's no reason that you shouldn't be outside having fun now. But there's also tons of cultural events to feed the spirit as well as the body. So, folks, go out and enjoy your community. Meet your neighbors. Have fun. And on the other side of the break...
Well, a couple things. First...
No, I wanted to go to a break, Fred.
No, we're not going to go to a break, Jeff.
That's right. Because it is your show, I will let you be in charge.
It is my show. We need to remind people again about friendjeff.com. Go there. Check out old programs. If you miss a show, you can always... listen to it.
Or crusty old programs. Go check them out again.
If you love the show, you can listen to it over and over and over again. Download it on your iPod.
Right, you can't get enough of our voices. We can lull you to sleep.
The dulcet tones of Jeff.
The annoying tones of Fred.
That's right. Also, if you would like to receive our newsletter, send us an email at fred@fredandjeff.com. We have a weekly newsletter that tells you what's going on in the show. It also links to all of our sponsors.
Right, and that's the other big part. Is if you know somebody in our community that's making Tucson a great place to live, nominate them to be on our show. We would love to meet them. We'd love to interview them and introduce them to everybody out there. So if you know somebody out there that's making a big difference, even a small difference, let us know, because we would love to introduce them to the community.
Okay. Is it time for a break now?
Yeah, I don't know. You're in charge.
I think it's time for a break.
All right. So when we come back, we'll be introducing you to our guest for today. So stick around.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Why are we proud to live in Tucson?
Because the trauma team at UMC delivers life-saving care.
Because the engineers at Solon make solar energy a reality.
While Davis-Monthan Air Force Base helps protect our freedoms.
Because researchers at Ventana Medical Systems lead the way in the nation's fight against cancer.
And because the Tucson Conquistadors raise millions of dollars to support kids' charities.
This is my Tucson, and together we thrive. Burger.
A simple, well-made burger, cooked to your choice.
Why Monkey Burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey Burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway and Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back to the Fred and Jeff Show.
I'm here with my intrepid older brother, Fred. This is Jeff Ronstadt.
Hola, Tucson.
So we got a big show for you today. We're pretty excited about our guest here today.
Yes, we've actually tried to get him on for a while now. We used to do this segment every once in a while where we'd have a guest come on and sort of talk about something completely juxtaposed to what they're known for in the community. And then have somebody, you know, people call in or try to call in and figure out who they are, and they would win a prize.
But then we spent the whole show trying to figure out what to talk to that person about that was so beyond what people know them for that we never really got to know who they were. So, and that, what kind of a cool thing they did for the community. So we've decided today to just kind of...
We actually had this planned for our guests, but we decided at lunch today...
Yeah, we can't do it.
Can't do it.
No, you mean breakfast.
Yeah,
breakfast this morning. So anyhow, Fred, go ahead. Introduce our fabulous guest.
Well, our guest is George Hansen, the conductor of the Tucson Symphony Orchestra. Welcome, George.
Guys, hello. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. So, George, where are you from?
Well, I grew up in Minnesota. I was born in Iowa. I actually moved to Tucson from New York City.
Oh, wait a minute. So you were born in Iowa?
Born in Iowa, raised in Minnesota.
And where'd you go to school?
Well, I went to Concordia College up in northern Minnesota. Then I went to Indiana University.
Oh, boo.
Yeah.
I come from a long line of my family, my wife's family, are all from Purdue. They're all Boilermakers.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure most of them have turned the show off now.
Little south of there. And then I finished up my schooling in Vienna, Austria.
No kidding.
Yep.
How did you get to Vienna?
Well, it was courtesy of the Rotary Club Foundation. I got a Rotary scholarship to go study in a German-speaking country. I picked Vienna, and it sort of changed my whole life.
In what way?
Well, while I was there, I had already met Leonard Bernstein. He was a pivotal figure in my in my career as well. But while I was in Vienna, I had a chance to work with him at the Vienna State Opera and assist him with the Vienna Philharmonic. And then after all that was over, I jumped in and conducted for my first opera ever with no rehearsal whatsoever at the Vienna Chamber Opera. Then I
hopped in. How old were you when you did that?
Oh, I think I was 11.
11 years old? Are you kidding us?
I was in my mid-20s. I was 25,
wow,
26
That was going to be our trivia question.
Prodigy conductor.
That's amazing.
And then I went over to Budapest, which is just about 2 or 3 hour car drive, and entered a big competition, which I won. And that wound up sort of giving me a real jump start in my career.
That's amazing. How did you meet Leonard Bernstein?
I actually met him at Indiana. He came there to compose his what turned out to be the last work that he ever composed for stage. It was called A Quiet Place. It was really the sequel to his life's story. It was really a very meaningful piece for him. But the reason he did it at IU was Indiana is basically the greatest opera school in the world. It's the biggest with all the great teachers. Well, not all the great teachers, but many great teachers.
Now, when you say the world, you're talking the world?
The world, yes.
Greater than any place in Europe?
Yeah.
As a school for teaching opera singers, yes. In terms of sheer numbers and quality, Indiana University is the biggest and the greatest opera school in the world.
Wow, that's amazing.
And Bernstein came there because he wanted to. He was writing an opera, and he wanted to be able to stay up all night, write a few pages of score, send it down to have it copied, and then have singers sing it back to him the next day. And this was the perfect place to do that because we had so many wonderful singers who would do absolutely anything to work with Leonard Bernstein.
So that sounds like a grad student project.
It was, and I wound up conducting a rehearsal, and he critiqued me, and that's really how I met him.
So I want to make a connection here. You guys at the Tucson Symphony Orchestra have a young composers program.
Correct.
Okay. When you were a young man and you were, you know, thinking about what you wanted to do with your life, when did it kind of come together for you that you wanted to be a conductor?
Not till I was 18.
Okay, and what was that? What was that turning point for you that helped you follow that dream?
Well, ironically, I told this story on the radio once with my father sitting next to me, and here's the story. I had decided to become a piano major, and was practicing the piano, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours every day.
Wow!
I came home one night and sat down. I put on a recording on my LP turntable.
Right.
I don't know if you remember what those are.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, this is fantastic music. And I had to go look to see what it was that I'd put on. Turned out it was Mahler's First Symphony, Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 1, The Titan, which is incidentally at the end of next season, which I know we're going to talk about soon.
Right.
We're going to close a season of Heroes and Lovers with the most heroic symphony ever written. So I said, by the end of that side of the disc, of a recording by Seiji Ozawa of Mahler's First, I had decided I was going to become a conductor. And when I told this story, my father looked over at me on the radio and said, well, that's amazing, because when he then told the story about how when he was a young man, about 17, he went to Chicago from central Minnesota on the train to have a trumpet lesson. It turned out that it was this young new trumpet player the Chicago Symphony had named Bud Herseth. He had the lesson, and then the guy says, "So, Bobby, I've got 2 tickets for tonight. Would you like to come?" And until that moment, my father was planning to take over the funeral home, the Hanson Funeral Home in Osakis, Minnesota. But that night, he went to the Chicago Symphony and decided to become a professional musician, and the piece on the program was Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 1.
Wow.
And neither of us knew that we had both come to music through that piece. It was quite a remarkable discovery.
Isn't it amazing how most children don't know how their folks pick their vocation? They just never think to ask. How did you become a symphony conductor, Dad? Or how did you become an insurance sales guy, Dad? Or and then once they find out what that backstory is, it's amazing how much it helps them on their way.
Yeah, I've never had that talk with my boys, I have to admit.
Interesting. That's great. So I want to get back to the Young Composers Program. So as you were a young man and you had this epiphany and you decided, gosh, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and you got to travel the world and meet these incredible people and have these incredible experiences. How is that helping you with these kids in Tucson that are that you've got put together with this Young Composers Program?
Well, the great thing about that Young Composers Program, we should talk about what it is.
Sure.
It's kids just say, I might want to learn how to compose. So on a Saturday in the fall, they show up at the Tucson Symphony Center up on Grant and 6th. And they sit through a class and they get some basics. And then they say, they're just told, write a melody and bring it back. And the next week, they learn how to orchestrate it. They learn how to harmonize it. They learn how to create a piece of music out of an idea that they have. And at the end of the year, which this year is going to be Friday night, May 4th, they get to hear that piece performed by a fully professional orchestra. That is a unique program in all of the world. And while some of the programs, similar programs may be springing up now, that we were the first and we are the leader in that. It's the most remarkable thing. And of course, what's so great about it is you watch this kid who, not even sure if he wants to become a composer and certainly doesn't know anything about it, winds up writing this piece, which he hears or she hears for the first time. You see their eyes light up. It's the most remarkable thing.
Now, what do they have to have in their kit bag when they show up? Do they have to know how to read music? Do they have to be able to play an instrument?
Well, the short answer to that is no. They don't have to be. Certainly, it's an advantage the more you know when you walk in there. But we have kids starting out who have really only rudimentary understanding of music at all. And, of course, by the end, they know a great deal because along the way of learning how to orchestrate their piece, for example, they have to know how, you know, what's the range, what's the highest note that you can play on a clarinet, for example. And I'll give you a hint, it's pretty high. you know, what's the lowest note you can play on an oboe? You learn all those things in the process, and where does the oboe sound the best? What register, what range? That's the kind of stuff that kids learn in this class, and it's really remarkable.
That's amazing.
Now, I've been to, I think last year, I went to one of the performances, and it may have been sort of like a study session, because what happened was the piece was played, and then you and the musicians in this orchestra said, you know, this really worked, this didn't work. So it was sort of a dialogue between the composer and the musicians and yourself.
Well, that's part of the process, and that is the end of the process, in fact, because we have so many youngsters now signing up for this. We have so many pieces, and of course, orchestra time is money. Every minute of orchestra time costs money because they're all professionals. So we tried, in fact, we're having to look at expanding this program now, and that obviously takes some financial support. But for the moment, it's just one session, 2.5 hours, with a 20-minute break. And so if you've got 9 pieces of music, you figure out how many minutes there are. Well, you have exactly enough time to play it once, 1 or 2 minutes of comments from the composer or corrections, and then you play it again, and it's all recorded. And that's what's going to take place on May 4th.
Wow, that's fabulous.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Where do these kids come from?
Well, almost all of them are local, but we're starting to get a little attention up in Phoenix. And since it meets on Saturday mornings, it's a viable thing. In fact, I'm not even certain of the time on Saturdays.
You mean it's a viable thing for these kids from Phoenix to drive down to?
Yeah, because once people figure out how extraordinary this program is, frankly, if they're in their early teens and they're actually thinking, I'd like to be a composer, boy, there's nothing greater in the world for them to do.
Whose idea was this?
It goes back to Carol Reinhart. He was the primary driver of this, and it's been several decades now. Carol is still around, and he's being very supportive of the program, but he's the one who conceived the whole thing. His original work, it was in the area of opera. He would have young kids, kindergarten-age kids, writing operas. And this expanded then into this...
I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Kindergarten-age kids writing opera?
Correct.
Now, how is that possible?
Well, they're not...
Yeah, what was the drama and the conflict?
It's not the completed... Yeah. It's not the completed
Someone,
project.
My sister took my Barbie
Sure. A little drama on the playground, you know? But Carol would be a great guest for you sometime.
Yeah, we absolutely should talk to him. That would be great.
And this spun off, and then Ilona Vukovic-Gay has been a primary leader within the symphony organization. I would say... Without those two people, the project wouldn't ever have survived.
Now, she's one of the musicians, right?
Ilona is one of our violists, and she's also in the Tucson Symphony String Quartet. But when you watch her work with these kids, you see that this is her, to some extent, this is her calling. She is the one who, once Carol got the whole thing going, she's the one who picked up the ball and ran with it.
That's awesome. So, and those do sound like great guests for a future show, Fred. So let's get on that. But I want to get back to your calling. So you're in Vienna, and you're having an amazing experience in Vienna. You leave Indiana. You get to Vienna. What happens then?
Well, I won the competition in Budapest. It lasted a month. And it was the very first time I ever conducted in an opera house. It wasn't the first opera I'd ever conducted, but the first time I conducted in a professional opera house with no rehearsal. It was on a Tuesday night.
Typical?
Well, for an audition, yes.
Okay.
And I was offered the job, interestingly enough, but frankly, that's for another topic, another show. I heard they were looking for a conductor. I walked in on a Friday morning, and I had with me the piano score for Don Giovanni and La Boheme. And I sat down, I played an act, I played the orchestra part and sang the vocal parts. And the woman in charge of that said, okay, you're qualified. So I went up to see the intendant, this Hungarian guy, and he said, so do you know Mozart's opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio? And I said, well, sure. And he said, well,
because
that's...
Because you've been around.
Yeah, of course I know.
You know
it.
These things.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you know the first president of the United States?
Sure.
You might as well
ask me. Are you kidding me?
And then so he said, well, that's good. Today's Friday. On Tuesday, we have a performance. And as your audition, we'd like you to conduct it. So be here. You know, the show's at 7:30. Come a little early. You can talk with the singers.
And how many people are in the crowd that night?
Oh, it was packed. It was packed. It was probably 800,000 to 900,000.
Holy
900 people, and that's about the capacity of the house. Because you're in Mozart's home.
I mean,
this is where he wrote the piece.
Wow. So how did it go?
It went great. And a few days later, the guy called me, to offer me the job. I was in Budapest though, and since he's Hungarian, he had connections over there. And he was learning that I was doing really well in this competition. So now he called me up, offers me the job. And I had to turn it down because of all the concerts that I got as part of the prize for winning the Budapest competition, he wouldn't let me out. He said, I'll give you the contract, but you can't guest conduct anywhere else. And I reluctantly had to turn it down because I just won this competition. Now I was going to conduct all over Europe.
Wow.
So it was really unfortunate. There was some kind of power thing going on with that particular personality.
Well, isn't it amazing how Rotary, of all things, can send us into directions that really make an impact on our life?
Well,
that's amazing.
That's absolutely true. And the competition in Budapest was so extraordinary because I had begun, I was young and single, and I started going out with one of the interpreters.
Which lovely, is a story for another time too, right?
A lovely Hungarian girl. And so she was telling me what the judges were saying. And the Russian judge was saying, we're going to have to pick this Soviet kid. And the other communist judges ordinarily would have to get in line, but they refused. So there was a big behind-the-scenes brouhaha, and turned out the American won, namely me.
That's awesome.
That's great.
All right, so we got to take a quick break for the bottom of the hour news. And folks, stick around because we haven't even scratched the surface here with George Hansen, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Accident involving a recreational vehicle in Kansas. It happened on the I-35 in Osage County. Authorities say multiple fatalities have been reported and as many as 18 people injured. Representatives of 60 nations met in Istanbul on the situation in Syria. The group is intent on helping develop a plan for the Syrian people to throw off the regime of Bashar al-Assad. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton tells ABC News.
It is a complicated area. There's no doubt about that. But I think most people really want the U.S. involved.
Saudi Arabia and other Gulf countries are said to be creating a multi-million-dollar fund to pay members of the rebel Free Syrian Army and soldiers who defect from the regime. Tragedy compounded in South Carolina. Authorities say the two-year-old son of U.S. Airman Nick Alden, who was killed last year in an attack at a German airport, has himself been killed in the family home by a dresser that fell on him. Richard Cantu.
I'm meteorologist Aaron Brackett. A red flag warning is in effect for most of southern Arizona for today. Looking for that to stay in effect until 8 o'clock tonight, so watch out. Do not throw those cigarette butts out the window. We have a high fire danger. Also, visibilities could be reduced as those winds gust up to 40 miles per hour at times. A high of just 77 today, 47 tonight, and as we start out the work week on your Monday, just 68 degrees. For 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM, I'm meteorologist Aaron Brackett.
Hi, this is Jeff Ronstadt. March is Write a Will Month. That means that you and your spouse should take some time to sit down and write a will. Most people don't have a will because they think, oh, you know, it won't happen to me. And then when it does, then the financial chaos that it brings about, it's horrible. So not only do you lose a loved one, but then instead of being able just to grieve the loss of that loved one, you're having to deal with financial ruin. So if you don't have life insurance, please get some life insurance. And if you don't have a will, write a will. And most people think that having a will is too expensive. It's not. There are community forums this month where folks will sit down and show you how to write a will. Go to the Ronstadt Insurance webpage and we'll direct you to those community events. But also, we're giving away a will this month to a family that doesn't have assets greater than $1 million. We will pay for them to get a will, all in the name of trying to put the word out of how important it is to get a will. So please take some time and write a will. Give us a call at Ronstadt Insurance, 721-4848, and we'll help you write a will.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that'll exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Are you planning a special event or celebration? Call Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in southern Arizona.
Hi, this is Bill Viner with the Tucson Festival of Books. It's no wonder why the Tucson Festival of Books relies on Arizona Party Rental. They maintain high standards for all of their products and deliver five-star service.
Hi, this is Andy Brown, Vice President of A-Team Security and Event Services. I've been in the special event business now for 20 years, and nobody does it better than Arizona Party Rental. They have the largest selection of equipment, friendliest staff, and they really care about making your event special.
My name is Rebecca Guthrie, and I would highly recommend Arizona Party Rental to anyone who needs anything that has to do with parties or events. They are very friendly and make you feel like family, and that your event is just as important to them as it is to you.
Hey, thanks. Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. Make Arizona Party Rental your celebration destination. Visit our new showroom on Speedway and check us out on Facebook.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are in the midst of talking to
Fred,
our...
Fred, finally, when you could have said an icon of Tucson or one of the great people, one of these crazy, you know, adjectives that you use.
Well, you didn't let me finish my sentence.
Go ahead.
So we're in the middle of a conversation with George Hansen, who is the probably one of the more long-lived conductors in the history of the Tucson Symphony Orchestra.
Well, let's say long-tenured.
Long-tenured.
I'm still a pretty young guy.
better way to say it.
Yeah. So when we left you, you were in Budapest hanging out with a beautiful Hungarian girl, spying on the Russians, right?
Oh, yeah, but I can't talk about that.
No. But they picked the American over the communists. You got the job.
I got the first prize. And as a matter of fact, at that point, that was 1986. So I was in my mid-20s. And a lot of the prize was getting invited to guest conduct. And so many of those invitations, of course, were behind what was then known as the Iron Curtain.
Wow.
So I was conducting in Warsaw. I was conducting in Zagreb, and a lot of places in between. I made about 15 trips to Hungary. I went to Poland several times. And
what was it like?
Well, it was really remarkable. The two things I'll say about it. One is, when you're in your 20s and you're guest conducting important orchestras for the first time, you don't want to do it in Carnegie Hall because you're going to make mistakes. But if you can do it behind the Iron Curtain, you can imagine the advantage. You just simply say, well, yes, I conducted all these places and I learned a lot. And that's, you know, that's what Leonard Bernstein did, quite honestly, when he made his big debut with New York Philharmonic. His manager sent him to South America. And that's where he learned how to, that's where he got his real conducting chops together. For me, it was behind the Iron Curtain. I emerged from that, and although I maintained an apartment in Vienna for several years, I moved from Vienna to Birmingham, Alabama, where I became the number two conductor of the Alabama Symphony.
Wow. Well,
let's take a little segue here. Because
that's quite a jump.
Yeah, but I want to know, what does conductor do? Because I think most people, they go to the orchestra or they go to the Pops or whatever, and they see somebody up there with a stick just waving at the orchestra. And it's, you know, just by observing, an unlearned eye observing the symphony, you really don't get a sense of what a conductor actually does.
Well, a conductor basically serves as the number one, you're sort of a traffic cop. There are signals that the musicians learn, and I know that they sometimes look like they're not watching the conductor, but they, over decades, have individually developed the ability to watch the music, and with very little head movement, they are also in touch with what the conductor's doing. And combined with that, listening to their colleagues, that's how everybody stays together. But the conductor, through a series of hand signals, sets the tempo, indicates we're going to start now, can indicate whether he wants something either verbally or through gestures. That should be softer, that should be, you know, somebody should play louder. And then the second part of it is you are the chief interpreter. You're in very dangerous ground if you begin a rehearsal by talking about a piece. Instead, what you do is you play through the piece of music, and you hear what the orchestra is sending you, and sometimes it's a mixture of styles and approaches, and so your job is to simply unify that on an agreed approach. For example, you want everybody, when you're playing certain notes, you want everybody to be playing the same length. If some people are playing short and some people are playing long, or some people are playing smoothly and others are playing short and bouncy, legato versus staccato, you have this mixture of styles that communicates nothing. So the conductor's job is to say, let's all do it this way. And this is where the business gets very interesting, because sometimes you've got personalities in an orchestra who are very, very receptive, and they really want to do whatever, you know, whatever's going to make it sound better. And then there are sometimes other personalities who would prefer not to be told anything. And you have to figure out, especially when you're approaching a new orchestra for the first time, you have to figure out very quickly how to approach that orchestra, how to make suggestions, how often do you stop the orchestra and correct them versus assume that they're going to fix it on the way through, on the next time through. And then ultimately, the job of the conductor is to, regardless of what you've done in rehearsal, which is very often technical, your job as the conductor is to elevate the artistic level of the performance. That is, through your gestures and your concentration and your presence and your eye contact, you try to indicate to the players either, I want you to have more freedom to take a little bit of time here. This is your, if it's the principal clarinet, for example, please stretch out, you know, And you can do that through your gestures, through your expression on your face, or you say, oops, no, bases, you're getting a little behind there, or, you know, everybody comes together. But ultimately, it's how you communicate to the orchestra your desire to express the composer's wishes and communicate that to the audience. If it's a great performance, it's that kind of collaborative effort between the musicians and the orchestra and the conductor that make that happen.
And a full orchestra is how many musicians? I know that for different performances, different pieces, it varies, but, you know, the full orchestra.
We typically have 80-something on stage as a baseline. So 84, 88, something along those lines. We do Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. We have over 100. We do Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 3, which I hope we'll do soon. We'll have 115 players plus a chorus. You know, so it does vary pretty widely. Our Masterworks series is a series where you're most likely to hear, say, Mozart or Schubert, some of the older music where orchestras used to be smaller. You'll hear Mozart, Schubert, and early Beethoven with our Masterworks series at Catalina Foothills High School. That's typically 42 players.
Wow. And, I mean, and there's, you do have all sorts of different types of opportunities for people to hear these music, because there's the classic series, there's the Masterworks series, there's the Pops, and then you also have the concert for kids on Saturdays. They have small groups will come in and play music for children, small
right.
children.
Just for kids. They are performed by our ensembles, the string quartet, the woodwind and brass quintets, the percussion ensemble, and so forth. We play for about 65 to 75,000 individual grown-up visits to downtown. That's how many people we bring downtown.
That's a ton.
And then we play for another, anywhere from 5 to 20,000 school-age kids that we actually bring in. And that the number gets bigger when we have more support, because, of course, that costs money. And then we get out into the community as well. We get out into all of Southern Arizona. We played for two sold-out shows of Beethoven, Symphony No. 1, in Bisbee. It was in the beautiful Catholic cathedral down there, 750 people per show, total of 1,500 people, which I believe is the entire population of Bisbee.
You know, two questions for you. Going back to what you just said, when you're behind the Iron Curtain, you can make mistakes. What kind of mistakes could you make? Help us understand what kind of a mistake a conductor can make.
Well, for example, the union boss in a communist country comes in and is rather gruffly tells you that not the union boss, but he's the party boss for that broadcast thing, and he says, well, the apparatchiks insist that we rehearse at 8 a.m. because everybody else has to come in, and musicians, of course, never. You can't really make music at 8 a.m.
They're getting rid of their hangover.
Rehearsals start at 10 usually at the earliest, and if you've got a concert the night before, you might bump the rehearsal to 11. So they were. It's almost like they were being punished that they had to come in at 8 o'clock. And one morning, here's a good one. They told me that since I didn't speak neither Serbian nor Croatian, when I rehearsed in Zagreb, it would be just fine if I used German. So I began with them in very conversational German, and I would simply say, you know, trumpets, could you play that a little bit more delicately? And then they would nod at me, and then we'd go back, and they would play it exactly the same way they did before. And I thought, well, now either they don't, you know, they don't like what I'm saying, or they can't do what I'm asking them to do. And I was really somewhat befuddled. And then one of those early morning rehearsals, I was saying to go to measure number 27, and I accidentally spoke and used a German word, which is essentially a slang word for a part of the male anatomy.
Rear end.
No. And nobody laughed except one violist who practically fell out of his chair. And I realized that the whole week, no one had understood a word that I'd said, but they had just wanted to say, oh, yes, maestro, no problem, maestro. They didn't have any idea. So that, I mean, that would be a classic one. The other key one was the orchestras really wanted you to be a maestro. And by that I mean they expected the conductor to walk into a rehearsal with a, you know, a fur coat around his shoulder, sunglasses on, and a cigarette holder, and saying, you know, why isn't my dressing room ready for me?
Wow.
And Americans don't expect that. American orchestras, if you walk, if an American walks in like that to an American orchestra, it's, he's pretty much finished. We conductors make suggestions. We work somewhat
collaboratively.
Bernstein. Yeah, collaborative. Bernstein was famous for saying, "Let's make music together as friends." Well, if you start off trying to be friendly and making very gentle suggestions, some of the orchestras I faced in the 80s and early 90s in Eastern Europe weren't really prepared to work that way.
They didn't know what to do with you.
No, they wanted somebody to tell them, gosh darn it, that's got to be that way. Not, gosh, could you please try this? Or, God forbid, if the principal cellist says to you, wouldn't it be better, maestro, if we did the bowing this way? And the conductor says, well, okay, try it. Well, then the entire cello section thinks that the conductor doesn't know what he wants. And this was a very interesting lesson. And I had to learn. The culture shock was so huge, and it continued even, you know, after I had moved to Tucson and I would fly every month to Germany to conduct. The enormity of the gulf of the everything from the work ethic to the musical approach was so enormous that that culture shock outweighed any jet lag that I would suffer from for all those years.
Wow. Well, we need to take a break right now.
Quick one, yeah. So quick break, and we'll be right back to finish our interview with George Hansen, so stick around.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on-site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
Shelby, how does Five Star give back to its customers?
Existing monthly pest control customers who refer a friend to us receive a discount on their next service.
How about your current termite treatment customers?
When a customer's home is treated for termites, they refer a friend who has their home treated, they will receive an additional year of service on their termite contract.
Wow, that could add up to over $1,000 in savings.
Yes, it can. Log on to our website for details on our customer rewards program.
Five Star, the natural choice. 886-0045. FiveStarTermite.com.
When Jeff and I are looking for a good cigar, we head over to Anthony Cigar Emporium.
That's right, Fred. They have a great selection, knowledgeable staff, a comfortable environment. It's the perfect place to buy a cigar for any time.
Three convenient locations, one at Oracle and McGee, one at Crossroads Festival at Swan and Grant, and their new location at Williams Center at Craycroft and Broadway.
Come on over to Anthony Cigar Emporium, get your cigar, and you might even run into Fred and I, and you can tell us why you love Tucson.
Power Women Investing, an award-winning comprehensive financial services firm, offers customized programs designed to help grow and conserve your wealth. We encourage you to explore our website at powerwomeninvesting.com and learn more about the services we provide. If you would like to make an appointment, call us at 571-9053. That's 571-9053.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we're back. This is Fred and Jeff here. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we got a bunch of stuff to get through before right. The end of the show. And with us today is George Hansen, who's the conductor slash maestro of the Tucson Symphony Orchestra.
So, George, with the little bit of time we have left, we want to kind of gloss over your time in the South. because it probably wasn't that fun. Just kidding.
Yeah,
I'm just teasing. Just teasing. So you leave Europe. You go to Alabama.
I moved from Vienna to Birmingham, Alabama. That I have to say that was quite a little culture shock there.
But I bet you.
I was there for a year. I was the number two conductor of the Alabama Symphony, and I then became the number two conductor of the Atlanta Symphony.
Wow.
Was there for 5 years, had an absolutely marvelous time, loved Atlanta, great orchestra, great people. And that's, I think, of all the experiences I had, I might have learned at least as much from the orchestra in Atlanta as I learned any other time in my life. They were wonderful people, and not all orchestras behave this way, I have to say. If I was struggling with something, somebody would come and help me, and I would take their advice, and they liked the fact that I took their advice, so then they'd give me some more.
Southern hospitality.
And by the time I left there, I knew how to work with an orchestra like that.
Wow.
So I got up to, then I became assistant to Kurt Mazur with the New York Philharmonic, moved up there.
So, wow, that's a big jump.
NYC.
It was terrific. I was there for... a year before I got my first music directorship in Anchorage, Alaska. So I flew from New York to Anchorage every month for half the year.
You must have been logging unbelievable miles.
I was. And then in 96, I got this job.
Now I got to ask you, because I started to ask you this between the break, and I wanted our listeners to hear this when Fred and I heard it, is you went from the New York Philharmonic to Tucson, Arizona. You went from what could arguably be the pinnacle to what we think is the pinnacle, but it's in our little backyard. Why did you do that? What could you possibly been thinking to go from Broadway to Tucson?
Well, at the New York Philharmonic, I was one of several assistant conductors.
Okay.
And my only chance to conduct was if somebody got sick. And that's how Bernstein got his start. Bless his good fortune.
That's how Lou Gehrig got his start.
Exactly. But ultimately, nobody did. Although I did have a fellow from Spain, an aristocratic guy. I won't describe him because somebody will be able to figure out who it is. I was telling him that I was having dinner with him, and the orchestra was playing at Carnegie Hall, and I won't even mention who the conductor was. Kurt Mazur, but the piece was Mahler's First Symphony.
Wow!
And I was saying to my friend, whose name I am trying not to say, we were having dinner right across the street, and I said, you know, if this conductor would just get sick for me, I know every note of that piece. I could conduct it without a score, and I'll be in the New York Times tomorrow morning. You know, on 40 minutes notice. And he said to me, so, which hotel is he staying at?
Now, is there would conductors, you know, so if he knew what this piece meant to you, could you have gone up to him and said, look, this is the piece, and tell him your whole story?
No.
Would he have stepped down and said, sure, come on over, this one?
No, not in this kind of a scenario. But
too much competition.
Right. So I was number two there, and I moved here for the number one job. That's why those kinds of things happen.
And what did you see in Tucson that made the transition so easy?
Well, I saw tremendous potential here, and I still see that potential. I don't think we've fulfilled it yet. I don't think we've gotten to the full understanding where the community realizes, for example, the economic impact of a symphony orchestra as active and successful as ours.
Mm-hmm.
Just as to throw out a ballpark comparison, if you use Chamber of Commerce numbers and formulas, and you compared, let's say, spring training as it used to operate here,
right,
and the Tucson Symphony, and you calculated their economic impact, the symphony alone would be in the same ballpark, and literally and figuratively, as spring training. We're talking about nearly $20 million of economic impact from the symphony. And the huge difference is we've got 85 people on stage, and 84 of them live in Tucson. We've got maybe a guest pianist or somebody up there. 93% of our money stays in Tucson.
That's great.
So that economic impact, frankly, is probably greater because of the money at spring training. A lot of that money leaves town. Now, when I tell people that, most of the time they don't believe it at first. And then I say, well, here are the numbers. And then they say, well, baseball is much more broadly understood. And And that's when we have to talk about how a symphony orchestra really functions. I mean, we played the music of the Beatles last weekend between, well, last month.
That was a couple weekends ago.
Yeah, and you guys did the Bill Gans.
We did the Bill Gans Western Band one weekend. The next, we did the music of Paul McCartney on Saturday night. On Friday and Sunday, we played Beethoven's Missa Solemnis, the Solemn Mass. And we sold 2,000 tickets to each of those. So we sold 4,000 to Beethoven, 2,000 almost to Paul McCartney. If we can't reach you between those two points, Bill Gans, the Beatles, Beethoven.
We did Bugs Bunny, too. I mean, we took the kids to Bugs Bunny last year.
And next year we've got Calexico.
Oh, that's great.
Pink Martini, and my own personal favorite, whom I can't mention yet.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Because we don't quite have it.
We want breaking news on this show.
We don't quite have it, but let's just say, first time I heard the song, one of their big songs was called Come Sail Away.
Don't say, yeah.
I had to pull over when I heard that in my driving my father's car to see my girlfriend in northern Minnesota. And ever since then, I've wanted to work with the guy who's responsible for that song, whose name I won't mention, because we're still trying to nail that down.
Well, we got a couple of minutes. Let's talk about the season. Right now, you're in a huge subscription push.
Right, we're getting season renewals going on right now, and you can subscribe to the symphony and you can reserve great seats. Next season, we've got one of the most phenomenal seasons we've ever done. We've got Joshua Bell is coming. I mentioned Calexico, Pink Martini. We're going to do Verdi's Requiem as a part of the Desert Song Festival. It's a new organization with which we've linked up. And we're going to bring in four world-class singers to sing Verdi's Requiem. It's a Requiem Mass, but it's really more like an opera. It's like a concert opera.
It's beautiful.
It's stunning music. The entire season is built around heroes and lovers. So we'll start out with Strauss's The Life of a Hero, and Wagner's 200th birthday anniversary. So we're going to do some Wagner throughout, you know, Ride of the Valkyries and The Flying Dutchman, and we finish with Mahler's First Symphony. We've got the Verdi Requiem, we've got Stravinsky Petrushka, Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto, and then these fabulous pops acts from Broadway to Latin soul and rock.
So those are exciting. I mean, you've had Bernadette Peters come in. You've had Yo-Yo Ma. You've had, you know, world-class individuals coming in.
Yeah.
And the pops, I mean, Bill Gans, that was fun. The Beatles, Paul McCartney. You have the Warner Brothers stuff. It's all, I mean, it's accessible to anybody in this community.
That's right. We packed the house for an entire week twice with kids from age 3 to 5. We play for thousands of kindergartners for our kinder concerts. We play thousands of grade school kids for our young people's concerts.
That's great.
We're starting a family series at the Fox next year. We're partnering up with the Fox Theater and doing a ton of stuff there.
Is there anybody you want to say thank you to? We got about a minute left. Anybody you want to say thank you to in the community that has been instrumental in your guys' success?
Well, we've got a sponsor, just sponsored the Missa Solemnis. Dorothy Vanek helped us with that. And really, our new executive director, Andrew Bergensmith, doing a great job.
Great.
The board of directors is working hard and better than they ever have.
If someone wants to buy tickets for next year for the subscription now, where do they go?
Call 882-8585 or go to TucsonSymphony.org.
Great. George, you are absolutely one of the people that makes Tucson a great, great place to live with what you do, your passion. Thank you so much for being a member of our community.
And we have roses to give away. So the first person to send me an email, fred@fredandjeff.com, get a dozen roses from our friends at Mayfield Florists.
That's right. And folks, remember, if you missed the show, you can go to fredandjeff.com.
Broadcasting in crystal clear FM, because the truth can't be muffled.
We are 104.1.
The truth. KQTH FM and KQTH HD Tucson.